Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the HTI-1 Proposed Rule Task Force. I'm Mike Berry with ONC, and I'd like to thank you for joining us today. We do have several guest presenters with us today, and I'd like to thank them in advance for their participation. All of our task force meetings are open to the public, and your feedback is welcomed, which can be typed in the Zoom chat feature throughout the meeting, or can be made verbally during the public comment period that is scheduled toward the end of our meeting this morning. I'd like to begin roll call of our task force members, so when I call your name, please indicate that you are here. And I'll start with our co-chairs, Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Steve Eichner.
Good morning and welcome.
Nohung Liu is not able to join us today. Hans Butendick.
Good morning.
I'm not sure Elaine Johansson or Meg Marshall is with us today, so move on to Clem McDonald. Narish Thunderbrajand. Narish may be running a little bit late today, maybe joining us later. And Phil Sutherland. All right. Thank you so much. And now please join me in welcoming Stephen Lane and Steve Eichner for their opening remarks.
Thank you so much, Mike, and welcome everybody. Happy to be here again with you. Hung Liu, who normally leads this, is this group three? I think it is. This group three session was unable to join today. Which is unfortunate because we're talking about a topic that is near and dear to his heart, I know, which is laboratory data. But we are going to have a number of subject matter expert presentations after Carmela walks us through the RFI related to lab data interoperability. So very, very excited for this. I will be primarily leading the discussion, and Ike will be watching for the hand raising and taking notes in the spreadsheet as we go. I also want to thank all of you who joined us yesterday at the HITAC meeting. I think we had a good discussion. The presentation was well received by the HITAC with some interesting questions that arose. We did have a chance to raise some of the key issues that have been coming up in our discussions in anticipation of our future presentation next month with our recommendations. Also want to point out that your co-chairs have been hard at work trying to keep up with meeting notes from our past meetings. And the ONC team gets those posted to the website. You can get to those through the HITAC calendar. And I invite those of you with the time and interest, you know, we don't bring meeting minutes back here for review and approval in a formal way, but they are posted to the website. Invite anybody to go and review them. That is the documentation of our deliberations, you know, separate from the final recommendations that we come up with. So if people have time to review those point out any opportunities to make them better, that I think would be more than welcome. So with that introduction, anything else, Ike? If not, why don't we go ahead and dive in. Next slide, I think, will give us a chance to review our charge. Or charges, as it were. So this is the full task force charge, as we've seen many times. Go and drop down again. And here the highlight is on the specific charge that we're looking at today, looking at the requests for information on program standards, certification criteria, and information blocking. So this is, I think, more on the program standards side. And perhaps certification criteria, I guess we'll clarify as we go along. Next slide. All right, so we are digging into the request for information. This is the last bullet on our group three to-do list. Next slide. And again, we are starting with laboratory data interoperability, RFI. And Carmela, you are here to sort of clarify for us just what is being requested as part of the NPRM, and then we will hear from subject matter experts and then discuss whether there are opportunities for us to provide specific recommendations in response. Good morning, Phil. Thank you for joining us.
And Stephen, this is Stephen. Just wanted to add that we do have the chat that is open for contributions, both from task force members and the public. Task force members, you can select your audience. Everything that is included in the everyone will be included as if it, in part as part of the official notes and resources for the meeting, things that are to staff or private messages to other participants or not. Comments from the public will address during either during the meeting itself or during the public comment period that comes towards the end of the meeting. We do strongly encourage public comment. It's really important for the task force to get input from the public. It will really help us form our recommendations to HITECH and then on to ONC.
Thank you for that, Ike. And I will add my welcome to the members of the public. There are 10 of you out there at this moment. Many of you have been attending regularly. Some of you are here specifically with expertise in this domain. So really, really appreciate participation. We had a little bit of confusion last couple of meetings around hand raising by the public. The preference is to have the public hold their hand raising until we go to public comment at 10 minutes before the end of the meeting. But feel free, as we've said, to participate in the chat, directing your chat comments to everyone. We'll make them part of the public record. All right. So with that, Carmela, do you want to start? And then we'll work through our outside experts.
Sure. Good morning, everybody. Advance the slide, please. So we had an RFI, a request for information related to lab interoperability in HTI1. So a little bit of background for folks. In the 2015 edition proposed rule, ONC proposed to adopt certification criteria related to laboratory ordering that included some HL7 specifications, 2.5.1 lab order interface, commonly known as LOI, release 2. Also, electronic directory of services, EDOS, and lab results interface, release 2, commonly known as LRI. So these are all HL7 version 2 implementation guides. However, we received public comments on the proposal, and based on those comments, ONC did not adopt them in the 2015 edition rule. Now, fast forward a few years, and Section 2213B of the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2023 included a provision directing ONC to conduct a study on the use of standards for electronic ordering and reporting of lab test results. So it specifies that ONC shall conduct a study and determine the extent to which clinical labs are using standards for electronic ordering and reporting of lab results, and to assess different trends in laboratory compliance with such standards and their effect on the interoperability of lab data and public health data systems. Also to identify challenges related to collecting and reporting demographic and other data with respect to laboratory test results. Sometimes that's, we think of ask at order entry. Identify other challenges using or complying with standards and reporting lab test results with the data elements that have been identified in the standards, and just to review other relevant areas determined as appropriate by ONC. So that was in the Appropriations Act, and the RFI in HTI1, ONC seeks comment on topics such as the use of health IT standards by clinical laboratories, the use of such standards by those labs, and their effect on interoperability of lab data with public health systems, and any of the challenges that we list above. Now, specifically, the RFI has 5 questions. And it's which implementation guides or other standards should ONC adopt in certification criteria for health IT supporting transmittal and receipt of lab orders, results, and directory of services. The second one is that ONC is interested in the utility and maturity of existing HO7 version 2 and CCDA standards supporting lab interoperability and the impact of moving to Firebase lab data exchange. The next one is what barriers would additional health IT certification criteria for lab interoperability create for developers and other interested parties, and how might this impact adoption and use of technology? The next question is, would developers of lab information systems or IBD systems that have not traditionally submitted products for certification under the program seek out and benefit from certification criteria relevant to the products? And then the last specific question is, are there any steps that ONC and HHS should consider taking to advance lab data interoperability? So with that, we open it up to discussion.
Thank you so much, Carmela. I think that's really a great set of questions, and I'm looking forward to digging into them. Just providing a little bit of clinical context to this, obviously, laboratory data plays a central role in clinical care and decision-making. The ability to both be able to order and receive results of labs, but also to be able to gain access to a patient's history of laboratory test information is critical for decision-making, both at the individual and at the population level. We've all obviously been embroiled in a pandemic where lab result data was particularly important. So it is striking, I think, that Congress said that it was really time to focus in on this, even though we were unable to adopt specific standards back in the 2015 rule, as you said. So great opportunity, push back from Congress, kind of like we saw with the 21st Century Cures Act itself. It's like industry has not gotten here fast enough. We now need to put a little bit of muscle behind that. So glad that we're here discussing this.
And to add on to that, I think that there are a wide range of parties that are very interested in laboratory data and laboratory information exchange, not only looking at exchange within a single hospital or hospital system between a LIMS system and a larger EHR system, but also in support of exchange between hospitals, laboratories, and public health to support public health reporting, disease investigation, and disease control.
And of course, individuals, right? I mean, individuals
absolutely
desire and should and have the ability to access their complete laboratory data and to utilize that in their own decision making. Carmela, we have a question from a member of the public. Our friend Susan Clark asks, is this RFI inclusive of genetic and genomic lab data? When I've received this question in the past, I've always said, that's just another kind of lab data. There's microbiology, there's chemistry, there's hematology, there's genomics. It's just all lab data. Would you agree, or does the ONC have a different perspective?
I would agree with that.
Wonderful. There's your answer, Susan. All right. Seeing no other hands, why don't we go ahead to Ricky and your presentation. Ricky, would you like to introduce yourself as well?
Sure. My name is Ricky Merrick. I'm a staff at the Association of Public Health Laboratories. I've been working in electronic lab data exchange specifically to public health, but also helping public health laboratories since 2006. I'm also the co-chair of the Orders and Observations Workgroup at HL7 and a co-chair of the IHE Pathology and Laboratory domain at IHE. So do a lot of work in the standard development side and also in helping public health labs and public health agencies implement respective standards. So next slide. And most of the content on these slides, we had a working group meeting at HL7 last week, and we spent a quarter talking about this. So most of this is came into my brain kind of from that session, and is you know, lifted off some of those minutes. So some of you may have seen this already. And Camarilla read the questions, and I've structured these slides for each question, the thought process. So for laboratory orders, so, you know, number one has three different sections. So I'm going to focus on laboratory orders first as a subsections. And I've structured this to kind of highlight the available standards that I'm aware of, and then the consideration. So for lab orders, Carmela already mentioned in 2015, we were talking about LOI R2. We are now at LRI R4. It is version 2.5.1 based. We have the EDOS, which was split into two parts. It has the specification about how to exchange directory of services, and I'm going to talk about that part later. But it also includes a list of commonly asked at order entry questions. So those are questions that are originally intended to be things the laboratory needs to know to do their work in order to interpret the result that is for the test that is being ordered. But over time, and because ELR, so electronic lab reporting to public health, has been pretty successfully implemented and it's been a good way for public health agencies to get information, some of that data that's really important for public health to prioritize their case investigation, to you know, better understand the emergency situation and situational awareness, those were also added. So there are some of those type of questions in this document as well. So that's a list of how to code these commonly asked ask at order entry questions, and if they have coded answers, how to code those answers. Right now, that's focused on V2. So it's talking in V2 data types, for example, as response types. There is a project at HL7 that's kind of on hold because we don't have a project champion for it to make that more broad, broaden that aspect of this document to also describe what would the data type be in FHIR, what would it be in CDA. But again, that's a future project maybe. And then for LOI, LRI, and EDOS as a lab domain area, we have a guide for all the related vocabulary. It's called the value sets for IG, which gets published separately so that you can make updates to the value sets without having to update the actual specification. And then on the FHIR side of things, we are working on a FHIR order entry IG for any order workflow in the US, but that's in the development stage, so maybe in the future. And CDA, while it could capture the document of a laboratory order, it is not designed to deal with the workflow of ordering. So I've not included anything here. So considerations around laboratory orders, there are a lot of existing V2 interfaces out in the world and existing. Most of them use ORM because they're older than when we had OML. But some may be using custom OML. I personally think use of LOI R4 would be very good because it would enable consistent order content use and describe exactly the elements that are required by CLIA, because that was one of the things we did when we wrote LOI and LRI to ensure that all the CLIA required elements are covered. It does already provide guidance on how to use AUEs and how to identify them as such. And it includes profile components so that you can say in LOI, I'm using the base profile, but I'm also supporting public health, for example. So if there is a public health lab profile component that can be declared, you can declare conformance to, and that includes those additional elements that are important for public health. So those are the things that LOI provides. Next slide. So on laboratory orders, there's more. So I got two slides for that. So the first slide concentrates on the available standards in the US realm. I've not included what's available internationally because that's a lot more. So for results to providers, LRIR4, and for results to public health, there are several options. One is the ELRR1, which is in certification and is, you know, highly implemented everywhere. But then LRI also, like LOI, has a profile that has a public health component. And that's basically the newer version of ELRR1. So both of those would cover the use case of reporting results to public health. And again, the vocabulary that goes along with it. In CDA, I think, and this is not, I'm not that familiar with for results exchange between providers because I'm on the lab side. I think a lot of HIEs or providers use CCDA-based document exchange and associated template IGs. There may also be some V2 exchanges when HIEs are used. And then in FHIR, there is no explicit IG, but of course, US core, because some lab elements are in US CDI. US core has built a diagnostic report profile for laboratory result reporting and a US core laboratory result observation profile. Next slide. So for the considerations, I've already said LRI has those specific lab use cases. So that includes clinical genomics, that includes newborn screening, public health reporting, emergency preparedness, and some other specific things. So that you can support, or you have rules around how to report these more complex situations. And it would be really helpful if more people would, you know, use it to be more consistent across the different use cases. And then the nice thing about LRI is that it has those identifiable profile components, and those profile components could be pre-adopted into older result messages. I already mentioned the latest version of ELR really is the public health component in LRIR4. And so maybe we can update to the latter through SVAP, which might help a common base for others to move to LRI and also align the public health reporting with the clinical reporting stream and data elements. And then the US core profiles currently do not cover all CLIA elements. So from a perspective of exchanging laboratory results from the labs with ordering providers under CLIA, they would need to be updated to cover that use case. From my perspective, having results as FHIR resources available for access in other settings, so outside the lab to provider use case, might be a good initial use case for FHIR use. Next slide. So for the directory of services, there are two standards available. One is EDOS, it's a V251 based spec. The other one is the catalog IG based on FHIR. So EDOS, unlike LOI and LRI, is not as well established using V2 exchanges. It's often, and it's a different, it is part of the lab domain, but it's outside the, you know, workflow between providers and LISs. It's more for the LIS to let the EHR system that the provider uses know what format the what tests can be ordered and what format the results are expected and things like that. And so it's used when setting up new communication partners or when updates to the catalog happen. But it's still somewhat removed from the configuration workflow of the orders interface that the physician uses, because the EHR has to align multiple different incoming catalogs with what the physician can order from. So from an HL7 work group perspective, we were talking about not sure how much of an ROI it is to push for that. But EDOS V2, we're not proposing, or we wouldn't propose V2 version of EDOS because it's very complex and complicated. But using the FHIR catalog may be an option. But as I'm showing, it's to be published soon, so it's not that mature. But the benefit is that the generic paradigm of FHIR is you go look for something when you need it. Is helpful, for example, when you want to verify that the catalog is still up to date, or in a case where you might want to shop for the right lab to order the test from, when price transparency becomes more important. So that's my feedback. So on the first question. So next slide. Maturity of existing standards versus FHIR, right? So for provider laboratory interactions, V2 is it. It's been used for a long, long time, but it's not consistent because a lot of the V2 interfaces have been around for a long time, were built based off the base standard, and each partner to partner interchange set it up slightly differently. But they're well established. It's a lot of work to update them due to CLIA requirements. So there needs to be ROI for upgrading to later versions, newer versions. So potentially when new data elements need to be added or a larger use case that needs support is updated, that might be a good reason to push for that. So this is where I'm not as familiar with provider-provider payer exchange. I guess uses CCDA as well as V2 messages. But we were talking about, in the working group, we were talking about when would we think FHIR would be a good idea. So for ordering workflows, that order is, or that work is in progress at HL7. So we haven't really figured that out. So probably not immediately available. For CCDA documents, when they moving to FHIR documents and collections, that might be a good opportunity to migrate, because really they are static things that you don't have to deal with workflow elements, and that's pretty well defined. And then we're thinking over time, we'll have fewer and fewer people that have expertise in V2, and we have more and more people that have expertise in FHIR. And so once we get to that, decrease in V2 knowledge and increase in FHIR knowledge, that might be the way to, or the time frame to switch. Though if it's just adding one or two new data elements, adding those to an existing V2 feed might be still more efficient than switching to FHIR. Next slide. Additionally, we were thinking, to use FHIR mainly in greenfield topics. So stuff that V2 hasn't covered very well, for example, genomic data sharing, durable medical equipment orders, where you have to have more data for prior authorization. And there is an IG and STU out there for that already. We were thinking orders might be useful to incorporate into the workflow, where you have this situation that a provider says you're going to have this test done, and maybe you get a QR code or something as a patient, and then the patient, when I walk into the lab of my choice, that lab can scan the QR code, retrieve the order, which may be a FHIR resource or it may be a V2 message, however, whatever that partner supports at the time. So that was one place where we thought you know, FHIR might be really helpful for ordering. And then more complex, complicated use cases like genomics or anatomic pathology, where we don't have a good structured data in V2. And for public access to results, like for the provider, patient, or public, for outside the ordering provider, patients and public health or research might be a good approach. So that's our answer to number two. Next slide. Number three, we talked about LOI and LRI supporting the use of AOE data. And I'm sorry, I had a typo in there. So AOEs, as I said, there's two types. One is the AOE that the lab needs, and they're included in the catalog. And if you don't answer those, the lab's going to call you and say, hey, you know, I need the answer to this, because otherwise I can't give you the right interpretation for this test you want the result for. And then there are the other ones that are important for public health. And so the question there is, now that electronic case reporting becomes more and more established, and the source system for that kind of data really is the EHR, wouldn't it be better to make sure we have a good way of linking ELR and ECR, so the lab result, and the case report on the public health side, so that we don't have to keep stuffing things into LIS systems that they don't really need to care about. And then we could update LOI and LRI specifically to focus more on the AOEs that go through that. We did talk about the fact that there are sometimes labs that care for walk-in patients. So like clinics, for example, that have laboratories associated with them. So they manage more of that patient information. So they have the need to capture some more of that data that's relevant to public health within their system. And so maybe, you know, they should support ECR to report their results to public health. And there is some research that needs to happen, whether, you know, I know there is different reporting requirements when it's a provider reporting versus when it's a lab reporting. So we would need to make sure that those triggers are the same, and none of the lab reportables would be missed if the lab used ECR to report to public health. So the other thing we were talking about is when you have data exchange between two systems, if only one of the systems is certified, that's still not, you know, as helpful as if both are certified. But if you are looking at only certifying one, it should be the source system, because if the source system can generate the data in the expected certified way, then the receiver at least has the opportunity to get the data in that format. So ideally, both systems should be certified. So next. So the other things we were talking about was separating semantics from syntax aspects. So maybe it's not as important whether we structure the data in V2 or FHIR resources, but what we want to really focus on maybe is identify the right semantic data. So the right code systems to use, the right code to value set rules, so that systems that use older syntax, different formats, can still, you know, have better quality data transmitted through those different formats. And I skipped the first one, focus on options. So rather than saying I, you know, certify LOI per se, maybe I can certify to this profile component alone, because then I can still use my old V2, 3, whatever profile, as long as I can support everything that the public health profile, public health component supports, in my older message, I could pre-adopt that profile component, and then I could still, you know, have better structured data than I would otherwise. Another thing we were discussing was differentiating between having certification requirements for the system and the tooling to test those systems from enforcing or incentivizing users to actually do this. Next slide. So this one we didn't really get to discuss in the working group. So these are kind of my own thoughts. So from a vendor perspective, I think if I can sell a certified product that has benefits to the user of the product, because the users can much more clearly see what features the product has, so that hopefully would be a motivation to participate. And one of those things is evidenced by what IHE does. They have connectathons where product vendors can participate. And when they successfully pass a connectathon, then they can post an integration statement saying, hey, I'm supporting this IHE profile. And so that could also provide such an avenue. Next slide. We did spend a little bit of time talking about other steps to consider. And so with my SHIELD hat on, which SHIELD stands for Systemic Harmonization and Interoperability Enhancement for Laboratory Data, we're doing a lot of work. We have a community roadmap that's once we find the official link to where we can officially publish it. It's been approved by the steering committee that calls out four different strategies to improve lab data overall within the entire healthcare ecosystem. But as part of that, one of the standards that we're encouraging for use is the LOINC to IVD test specification, or also known as LIVET, as a FHIR IG, because it can help exchange some of the data that we hope to provide in what we call the laboratory interoperability data repository. So that's a place like a library where you could go and say, I'm looking for this particular IVD test because I want to set it up, and I can get all the attributes that I need to set it up, including correct coding in my system. Maybe I've received a result from this IVD test, and I need to look at some other attributes like positive predictive value, or compare the cross-reactivity with other viruses, or for maybe an antigen test. And so some of that metadata that will help people use results better should be made available through that. So we think that might be helpful to consider. And then personally, I think it's important to not just certify the product, but maybe also do some testing of the site-specific implementation of those certified products, because it's one thing to have a certified product, it's another thing to not customize away the certified aspects of the product in a site-specific implementation. And I think that's all I have.
Thank you so much, Ricky. That was a tour de force, I must say. I don't see any hands up with comments. I'm also sensitive to the fact that we have a number of additional presenters. Did anybody want to ask any questions of Ricky? Hans has been including some helpful commentary in the chat. From his perspective, we do have some questions that came from the public, though I'm not sure they apply directly here. Louis Palacios, I think that's a separate question. We can come to that toward the end if we have time. Hans, did you have anything you wanted to add here?
Not at the moment. I'd like to hear the other as well, and then at the end summarize it into what might be a focus for HITECH. So rather than jumping in right now, I'm providing some thoughts in the chat for additional backdrop to help clarify the suggestion that I already put in the spreadsheet.
Perfect. Okay. And Ricky, I presume that APHL will be submitting all of this as public comment. Is that accurate?
I think a lot of this will be submitted through HL7, but APHL is also planning on submitting comments. So it may be similar. Yes.
Great. As I pointed out in the chat, our role here is to see what we can additionally add, or if there's any contradiction to any of this, you know, that we might want to submit, as opposed to just, you know, reiterating what we hear from our subject matter experts. All right, well, let's go on then to the next presentation. Thank you so much, Ricky. Next slide, our next presentation.
Stephen, I don't think we have any more presentations, but
okay.
We do have
perfect
the guest presenters that could offer their perspective verbally.
Well, then why don't let's do that. Let's go to our guest presenters. So who would like to go next? Who would like to jump in here? We've got a number.
This is Craig Newman. If you don't mind, I'll go first. I think it'll be relatively brief, if that's
perfect.
All right.
Thank you, Craig.
All right. So I'm Craig Newman. I'm with Altarm. We're a nonprofit organization. In my little section of it, we try to work with public health agencies to improve their interoperability, including in the orders and results space. I, like Ricky, I've been involved in this area for quite some time, probably going back to about the same 2006 timeframe that Ricky mentioned. I am currently a co-chair of the HL7 Public Health Work Group, as well as a co-chair of the HL7 V2 Management Group, which Ricky is as well, but I think omitted from her own introduction. So I will admit that my background is largely V2 focused, particularly in terms of the creation of the LOI and LRI specs way back in the day. So I don't have a specific presentation. Ricky, I think, as you mentioned, did a fantastic job. I did want to just reinforce a couple of points, I think, just for the committee to hear. I do agree that the focus on orders and results and perhaps a little bit less on directory services makes sense. I think it's the orders and results that we're hearing as being the priority in many public health scenarios. And so I do agree with that. I also very, very much agree with the idea that these implementation guides are broken down into profiles, and any regulation or certification requirements must be very specific on the functionality that systems are expected to be able to meet. We know from past experience in the immunization world that when an IG is very broad and covers a number of scenarios, when the certification requirements are not clearly defined, it leads to confusion as to what systems are expected to support. And that leads to confusion in the implementation space in the real world. And so we definitely would encourage ONC to be as specific as they can when they put forth requirements for systems and for implementations. I will also agree that the V2 standard really is the workhorse standard for orders and results today. And we don't see anything, I think, in public health and more generally that says that is likely to change. I think Ricky brought up some good points on when FHIR may become more relevant as the community becomes more familiar with it. It becomes more widespread, and the knowledge of V2 starts to decline, as you know it eventually will. So we think focusing particularly in the short term on the V2 specifications makes a lot of sense. I would raise some concern, I guess, over the idea of the ORM versus OML message types. I think it is very practical that the older message types will remain in use in circulation for a good long time. But We do also have to consider that anytime that there are multiple ways of doing things, that means somebody has to support all ways, otherwise you get disconnects. And so while I agree the ORMs are established, I think as we look forward, we may want to provide requirements that as much as possible provide a single approach that everyone can implement and we don't have multiple ways of potentially doing the same thing. I know that brings to my mind anyway discussions that we had back in the early stages of meaningful use and certification and attestation about whether or not existing established real world implementations and integrations need to meet new requirements as products become certified, and whether or not there is a role for lack of a better term, grandfathering in things that exist and making the requirements apply going forward. And so I would encourage ONC, I think, to think about what the impact of requiring LOI or profiles in LOI as part of certification and other incentive programs, what that means for existing integrations, and be very clear one way or the other about how those requirements apply to how data is flowing in the real world today. I think that is mostly it. I guess I'll speak generally from the public health side, at least in my experience, is that they're still very much learning about FHIR, about what it offers. They are steeped in V2 as it's been a focus in public health reporting for quite a while now. And I would, again, encourage folks to think about that as they think about at least the near-term future and any requirements that are established, that we want to make sure that we have practical expectations for vendors, for implementers, for healthcare organizations, and for public health. And today, right, a lot of that expertise is focused in the V2 domain. And so I think that should continue to be the core of any recommendations or requirements that are put forward. I think I'll leave it there. I'm happy to also answer any questions as part of the larger discussion if there are any from the group. So I'll pass it back to you, Stephen.
Thank you so much, Craig, for taking the time to show up and share all of that with us. Ricky, you've included some information in the chat. Did you want to respond to Craig?
No, I agree with what Craig's saying. I just writing it out in the back.
No, that's perfect. That's perfect. And thank you. All right. So we also have Aaron Holt and Eric Krugnail here to offer their perspectives. Let's see. I think Krugnail comes before Holt in the alphabet. So I'll just pick on Eric first, unless you'd rather have Aaron go first.
Oh, that's fine. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, okay. And we can see you. Thank you, Eric.
Okay, good. So Eric Krugnail, I'm with Sonic Healthcare. We are a laboratory company globally, but I work for the U.S. operation and have been supporting our lab interoperability and connectivity efforts for quite a few years. We're commercial laboratory, so I'm representing those interests. I'm the co-chair of the American Clinical Lab Association's IT committee, and I'm also on the SHIELD steering committee. I think this is a great opportunity, obviously, to respond to the RFI and move lab interoperability ahead. I think that it's absolutely needed, living this in the trenches for the past 10, 15 years. Brief history from the commercial lab perspective. While meaningful use and the certification requirements, as Ricky mentioned, the lab standards weren't necessarily adopted or were partially adopted. That didn't eliminate the demand for lab interoperability between commercial labs and EHR, eligible providers, let's just say, that were implementing EHRs and you know, attesting to meaningful use in different ways. Lab interoperability, lab connectivity was a must for them. And labs, you know, had to make significant investments to implement orders and results interfaces. And again, the standards and what was used is you know, HL7 2.x most commonly, not the LOI or LRI standards. And the other piece of it is, you know, since labs were not eligible providers, LIS systems did not need to meet certification requirements. I think the underlying systems, and again, many of them still would not meet those requirements and are not their legacy, let's just call them legacy systems, you know, they would need some work in order to be able to support some of the, you know, one of our biggest challenges is supporting some of the data elements, right? Many lab systems, you know, and you know, I see this in, you know, real world situations. You're lucky if they have a place to store a LOIN code against a result, let alone against an order code, or to map SNOMED into your lab results. So, you know, those would be like examples of investments that have to be made into those systems to support some of that, or you wind up doing what we do today, which is deal with it external to the system, you know, in your interface engine or in an external, you know, application that's providing that that functionality. So, just, you know, with regards to, I do support LIS, you know, some level of certification, but the other thing in addition to that. On the LIS side, there were also incentives on the, you know, going back to say meaningful use, there were incentives on the provider side to adopt and use the certified technology in a meaningful way. So in some way to incentivize the laboratories to adopt these systems and make the investments in the technology that's necessary to support the interoperability, I think is important as well. With regards to two standards, I would agree with what Ricky and Craig said. And again, there are just thousands of these, you know, legacy connections in place and what would be the, you know, cost benefit of upgrading them or replacing them. I think, you know, looking at that closely where there is value to it would be important. I also do feel like the EDOS use case, which I think was probably promoted through the efforts of the commercial labs more than anything. It hasn't been adopted. I think it would have huge benefits to, you know, to those commercial lab. You know, we've got tens of thousands, if not more, hundreds of thousands of point-to-point order and result connections. We've got tens of thousands of compendiums loaded in various EHRs that are very difficult and cumbersome and burdensome to maintain, to update, to you know, deprecate codes that are no longer in use. So the thought of some sort of a solution for that, even to implement new interfaces, you know, it's a burden. And I think FHIR potentially is a you know, probably the way to go there because EDOS just hasn't been adopted or implemented, and I think that is something that could be very valuable to the commercial labs. Let me see what other notes that I have here. I think the other thing I just wanted to mention was, you know, labs continue to make significant investments in, you know, continuing to perpetuate this very basic non-standard connectivity between providers, whether that could be lab to lab or it could be lab to, you know, to a referring provider. You know, there's significant, how much more can labs invest in this area? So, you know, the sooner we can, you know, kind of figure out where we want to go, and I think it's great to comment on these things and then provide the appropriate incentives and the appropriate, you know, targets for improving this, I think would be really beneficial. There was one other thing I wanted to mention about use cases and workflows. You know, one workflow also to consider with the on the order side is, you know, where we have, you know, we have orders that might, you know, at the time of referral, let's say in the EHR, there are aspects of that order that are not known, right? We don't have a collection date. There may be other AOEs and things that need to be collected at the, if you want to call it the point of care or at the point of collection. So that's just another point where, you know, that order flows from a EHR to maybe a collection management system in the lab to, you know, and then is completed there. So there may be things that can't be completed in that first step of that workflow. That was just one specific thing. Another specific thing, back to the limitations on the current LASs, examples of that might be, you know, which I've seen as being challenges is having enough detail about specimen information to have a valid SPM segment, let's just say. And also, we mentioned anatomic pathology, microbiology is another area. We deal with this with public health a lot. You know, the LIS systems are not necessarily equipped to provide the discrete data and codified data that is required for ELR or for these, for some of these other standards. So I think that was all I was going to comment on at this point, but appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Eric. And, I just wanted to raise the issue. We were talking about workflows and specifically where can FHIR valuably play a role. As a clinician, one of the challenges that I face is getting comprehensive lab history data from labs. You know, it's great when I order a test or when I'm either the ordering provider or a CC provider and I get that result by a V2. You know, it's nice when I can request CCDs, you know, from other providers and get some subset of lab data, you know, whatever the source system decides to send me with a given CCDA document. But truly what I want to be able to do is just ping all the labs and say, send me all the data this patient has ever had, you know, so that I can construct or access a comprehensive history of their lab results. Where do you see that, you know, on our roadmap? And, you know, and will FHIR specifically make that possible where, you know, V2 and CCDA are really not designed to give a full lab history download?
Yeah, that's an interesting use case. We've definitely seen that type of a request, but more so where you know, making the results available through via, say, a portal or user interface versus electronically. I think in practically to this point, that's either again been through some sort of a portal where rights can be granted and the use case, you know, the permitted use of that data is, you know, is treatment related. I have seen that been made available by labs. The other thing would be certainly through a health exchange. But that I could see that FHIR use case, the FHIR being about, beneficial for that specific use case. Again, when it's appropriate to be able to share that information, or service that type of request.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Again, I think labs, of course, are providers under the information sharing requirements. So, you know, should be fully able to participate and respond with data in the format requested. So as a provider, I very much want to be able to, send a query to Sonic and just download all the labs for my patients. I think we do need to work towards that to avoid any appearances of information blocking.
Yeah. You know, and again, that's another, where I think FHIR, fits that because, again, routing that to either an existing interface or maybe there isn't even an interface with that provider, right? A point-to-point.
Right. Why bother building an interface, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, great. Hans, your hand was up briefly. Did you want to add anything?
No, not yet. I wasn't sure whether there was a queue building for the end or not. So
we've got Aaron yet to go.
Yep, and then I will raise my hand.
Aaron?
Hey, everybody. just a sound check. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So my name is Erin Holt-Coyne. I'm the Chief Public Health Informatics Officer with the Tennessee Department of Health. I'm also a co-chair of the HL7 Public Health Work Group. I've been involved in public health informatics since probably around 2006, 2007 timeframe, and participating in standards development for public health since about 2011. Our agency, the Tennessee Department of Health, obviously, you know, operates a public health lab as well as other traditional surveillance and other public health programs. We also operate 56 primary care clinics, 16 of which are SQHCs. So we operate an electronic health record in addition to a LIMS, as well as surveillance and other public health data systems. And we are currently working through implementation of LOI LRI R3, in addition to supporting our usual ELR, as well as implementation of the LRI public health profile, specifically for electronic laboratory result reporting. So, the perspective that I'm bringing is not only from our traditional public health side of things, but also from some of the clinical care and associated implementation that we've been working through. And I have to make the statement that, you know, making the case for supporting lab-related standards-based interoperability is just critical. Besides reducing some obvious burden, I think building that infrastructure due to better alignment of the implementation across the standards and the actors that can be leveraged in times of emergency, frankly, that we were able to leverage to some capacity during COVID, but probably not to the extent that we should have been able to. And reducing the variation and the ambiguity to allow us to raise the bar for quality information available to all actors in the information chain when they need it is critical. So I'd like to run through a couple specific points. Regarding data availability and quality, discrepancies in interoperability can really lead to missing data. And we have seen that firsthand. We have a situation now where we're working through where we have misalignment of understanding of parent-child relationships within the lab result message, where we might be using, or a lab might be using, parent-child relationships to return results associated with reflex testing, and they're being automatically considered as micro, therefore not having necessarily susceptibilities. And for some reason, because of that, results are actually being resulted as text and not actual coded discrete data. That is a huge problem for many different reasons. Information captured as text or using inconsistent non-standard coding can lead to inability to trend, certainly without special effort, and may result in data not being available for reporting, like federal reporting, like UDS reporting, which is something that we're working through right now. It's hard to have the data needed to meet the obligations around laboratory result reporting to public health without that data coming in the order message, particularly in regards to some specific patient-related data, information like race and ethnicity, contact information. There's been a lot of conversation about the need for patient address for jurisdiction assignment. When that information is not given, jurisdiction is assigned based on the facility or the provider, which can cause delay in initiating that investigation and transmission mitigation. There's also a need to be able to document in a standard way confidentiality around a patient or a visit, which can impact the information communicated to a lab for order for billing. So that has been critical to us. And then lab specific, going back to some of the conversation about an ORM, the general order message versus the OML, the lab order message. I mean, we're seeing this right now where we have requirements to receive specific information regarding specimen, and our own lab orders may be being sent as a general ORM message, not including specimen. That burden that is then put on our clinical care to do ACID order entry questions to collect that specimen, additional specimen information to be able to send to the lab. So that is a place where reaching some agreement and creating some alignment on the standards for what is needed now could be really beneficial. Also, this notion of handling preliminary, final, and corrected results in a standard way to maintain fidelity and confidence of information is also really critical, not only for our public health programs, but also in building that confidence and fidelity and reliability in our clinical care usage of that information. I'm gonna skip that. Talking a little bit about data usability and readiness, I kind of alluded to the ability to be able to scale and leverage daily operations for orders and results for emergent situations like for COVID or MPOX. I think that's critical. And there really should be infrastructure in place with a process to maintain and update vocabulary, including in emergent situations. So not just one time or biannual, but on a allow for more frequent or emergent needs of maintaining that vocabulary. And so I think, you know, we oftentimes focus a lot on the syntax, but I'll echo Ricky in this, but there also needs to be some focus on semantics and the content and the value sets and the data types for this information. And then lastly, I just wanted to note that, you know, the high-tech public health data systems task force recommendations really kind of laid out a number of recommendations in this space. Let's see here, including transmission and receipt of orderables and results sufficient to trigger reporting criteria for ECR, electronic case reporting, ELR and transmission to cancer registries. Having that LOINC and SNOMED coding in place not only is great for computable semantic interoperability of laboratory data, but it's also going to allow the use of the trigger codes and having the trigger codes actually available to trigger the case report. So it kills a couple birds with one stone. So again, comprehensive use and normalization at the source of key terminologies, including LOINC, SNOMED, UCOM, and others. And then specifically adoption of the LOI and LRI implementation guides. In addition to that, the recommendations also specifically talked about needing to be able to support modular certification, advancing syntax and semantic certification criteria, but also provide a path from current baseline state to a target state. So what can we do now to help improve the current situation? And what steps can we take to work towards a target state? So I think that's something for this group to also consider. And then lastly, there were a couple other recommendations that I think also applied to this. Inclusion of newborn blood spot screening was one. Establishing real-world post-implementation testing, which I think could be critical, particularly in the lab realm. The need to harmonize with other public health workflows. I think sometimes there's a lot of confusion between electronic case reporting and electronic lab reporting, and they're definitely related, but they are not the same. The information is collected at different points in the clinical workflow. And to Ricky's point, it's not always appropriate to expect the lab to carry the burden of communicating certain information that really is captured elsewhere in the workflow that should be coming from another part of the system workflow, possibly in a case report. And then again, being able to leverage standard codes and syntax. There were several recommendations around those that might be able to be referenced for this group.
Thank you, Aaron. Hans.
Thank you, Stephen, and really appreciate all the updates and perspectives. This is a very complex area because in part it is that what are standards able to do? What are they capable of supporting? Could certification be done against the standards versus what's the right time to actually consider certification against what? And I really appreciate Aaron's last comments on what can we do now and what can we do over time to get somewhere. And I think that's at the heart of some of the comments that I wanted to share on where the high tech may want to focus. And that is Looking at the proliferation of connections that are there, we can all argue they are not necessarily ideal. They are varied, but they get data across. And when we look at going back to LRI having been in certification, is that the uptake was limited. So a lot of work done to certify, but the actual use of it, very limited. Goes back to some of the comments that Eric made as well, that effectively, and not directly perhaps, but that the focus was on the EHRs, not as much on the lab systems, the lack of incentives otherwise to provide that uptake. So I think there's a couple of different dynamics that we have to keep in mind that drive us. What can we focus on now and what should we focus on later? And what should we drive in perhaps other ways? Taking that perspective is that when we certify, particularly workflows, not queries, but the principle is the same effectively, we need to look at both parts or all parts of the workflow. In this case, two, the provider, ordering provider, and the lab mostly, because they both are the source of some of the information. The initial order, is that going out? Can that be shared with anybody? And the result, can that be shared with anybody? Are we consistent? And if we only look at one side, not the other, then that's not going to help in order to move forward. We don't see the uptake that we need. Second question is then, what should we focus on when we do it? And in this area is that, where are really the biggest challenges? Is it that data doesn't come across? Is it that data is in different syntax? Or is it the quality of the data and what can we do there? And mostly it seems at this point in time, not exclusively, but mostly challenges around consistent use of LOINC, SNOMED, UCOM. Are we interpreting vocabulary correctly, et cetera? So should we really focus on that part more so than the syntax? Because the question that comes up is that there is an effort investment to be done from what we currently have into the new format, but how much are we actually getting out of that in terms of the value that we get? And format is not necessarily driving some of the data quality issues that we're facing. So can we focus on vocabulary, which means is that how can we get what Shield is also looking at? How can we encourage that that the right language, the right LOINC, SNOMED, UCOM is used from the get-go, from the devices to lab onto EHRs and others? Are we putting enough effort there? And should that really be where a key focus should be? I would suggest yes, that's where it should be, and based on our discussions. The other part is that realization of, we have an implementation base there. We are not working with a greenfield. So how can we meet everybody where we are and grow that in the direction that we do? So if we are looking at that, can we take advantage of these profiles within the guides? Not the guides in total necessarily, but the capabilities that they point out, be it how to communicate devices consistently, how to communicate newborn to dry blood spot, et cetera, genomic data, so that they can be expanded to, that may some lead to them adopt everything because they might do it, but at least adopt those capabilities, the additional data for pandemic responses, et cetera. So focus on target areas, because a wholesale replacement just to move from one format to the latest format is a substantial amount of effort. But the question is, are we getting as much benefit out of it that we need to if we focus on it differently? And lastly, is that, yes, the workhorse, as Greg also indicated, is HL7 V2. FHIR is very useful in a number of areas as it's expanding, but not ready. But it also provides some other capabilities that certification of, let's say, catalog and Livit on the EHR side, what does that mean? Do you really need to do that? Or is it more about making the data available in similar fashions as LOINC is doing it with its vocabulary, that it's available at time of configuration, but does data really need to be, quote unquote, pushed out or made available directly inside an EHR or other HFT as well? So I think we have not really settled on what is really sufficient and good to support that challenge. And therefore, I believe is that the jumping into considering certification or considering it at this point in time for those areas, besides the fact that the guides are not ready, would be substantially premature. There's a lot that we need to learn in that space as to what's the right place to really make that data available. While at the same point in time, Fire US Core, enabling labs to expose data using the same Fire APIs as others, would be tremendously valuable, where it could be used because of the nature of the data and CCDA. So I put some comments in the spreadsheet, but they focus around if we do workflow, focus on everybody participating in the workflow, not only one side. That's not going to be sufficient. Focus on the key quality issues that are in play, and take advantage of the fact that that there are profiles inside the guides to help advance that, and then build our progress forward rather than one big wholesale switchover. That the question is that that's a lot of effort that could have been streamlined quite a bit more.
Thank you, Hans. Ike?
Thank you so much. I've got 3 points to make. Number one, thinking about Fire and laboratory data, it may not be useful at the moment to use Fire for all laboratory related or laboratory results related functionality. However, we have included in the USCDI some components of elements that are related to laboratory results. So one of the things we may want to choose to address is what's the relationship between the two? Are we going to support, or should we look at supporting laboratory results, data access through certified technology, through USCDI for certified systems there? Do we treat LIMS systems differently? And if so, how would that actually work? Number two, we have not talked today, and I just want to make sure we've got a placeholder for it, to talk about patient access to laboratory results and the like. One of the things that makes that perhaps a little more complicated is a network of state laws that impact how and when patients may have access to their laboratory results data, in some cases embargoing it for several days, with the healthcare provider that ordered the test getting some early access to help interpret the data. And if we're looking at, again, providing access to test results, how do we incorporate enough information about those results so that the patients can begin to understand what they're seeing? Thirdly, looking at the relationship between electronic case reporting and electronic laboratory results reporting, I'm hoping that Aaron can provide just a little example as to where they're different, just so that there's a clear understanding of, hey, these are really different and it really does make a difference. They shouldn't be considered the same and they are not interchangeable. Aaron, can you provide just a little example?
I mean, generally, the intent of the case report is to provide like a notification to public health of a potential suspect, not reporting of a case, even though the name might suggest that. It's a heads up. So depending upon the condition, we might get that so much earlier in the workflow before, based on maybe even an order that was placed or something in the problem list, or lab information may not necessarily be available. And in certain situations, for certain conditions, we may need to act before the lab information is available. So waiting for lab or just relying on a lab or waiting for the lab information to send the case report isn't always going to be where we need to be. There's also information that may not necessarily be needed as a part of the laboratory workflow, but is documented elsewhere in the clinical or administrative workflow. And it may not be appropriate then to force laboratories to receive, to document, to carry, and to push. And we've certainly seen that with some of the, I think the COVID-related ask and order entry questions and maybe some of the additional patient demographic information. And we also have conditions that might only be laboratory reportable. So actually, like org-specific organisms only reportable from a laboratory versus diagnoses or clinical suspicion that are reported from clinical care. And we may have situations where there's no lab report even sent, for example, like with some of our overdose reporting. So there's reasons why those a case report and a lab report are used, and they together they tell a story that aids public health in making certain decisions at certain times, not only to determine case status, but also to initiate surveillance investigation, transmission mitigation, and patient care, like whether or not we let somebody or whether or not somebody is released from isolation, quarantine, that sort of thing.
Thanks so much. And here's one additional issue potentially.
Ike, we need to cut to public comment.
Let's come okay.
back. Yeah, let's go to public comment.
All right, thank you, Stephen. We'll return to our conversation shortly, but we're going to open up our meeting for public comment. If you're on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you happen to be on the phone only, press *9 to raise your hand, and once called upon, press *6 to mute and unmute your line. So let's pause just for a moment to see if any members of the public raise their hand.
Luis Palacios, I know you had a number of questions early on. This would be a good time to raise them if you want. If not, we can see if we have a moment to get back to them.
All right, we see Luis Palacios.
Oh, there we go. He got his hand up. I love it.
Go ahead, Luis. You might be muted.
You might be double muted.
I am double muted. Thank you for that. First time caller, as they say. And I have to go back to the question itself, because I think that part of it was answered, but at the same time, as a newbie, I'm going to say that it is, I deal with multiple specialties, and I'm sorry, I'm rambling, just a little nervous. And I have like radiology could, from a certain standpoint, could care less about what comes from a laboratory standpoint, but yet CCDAs and UCDIs force the issue for the importation of this information. And radiologists have the challenge of saying, do I need to pass this information forward or not? And I can't find a conclusive responsibility if this is required or not. So I'm just hoping that this body can tell me conclusively, what's that responsibility? Because from a certain standpoint, you know, I'll stop there. Let me just stop there and not ramble.
Luis, maybe you should restate the core of the question.
Okay. When I receive information from another entity, how much do I need to echo the information forward? Because I'm not responsible for the information wholesale. Does that make more sense?
Yeah. I think it's the core question of when you as an information holder are asked to release information, do you also release information that was generated elsewhere that you've received? And that is an open question in our industry, that people define their designated record set as they do. And some of them include information received from elsewhere and some of them don't. But thanks for the question. You might want to submit it as a public comment also.
Okay, thank you.
And I don't see any other hands up from the public. So let's cut back to our spreadsheet for the last 5 minutes. Ike, you said you got your questions answered. So we'll go to Eric.
Yes, just real quick. I think, you know, one, as Hans was making his last comments, you know, what really connected with me is that, you know, the greatest, you know, incentive, let's say, would be to, and benefit would be to get to that point where, you know, we have achieved, you know, a some much greater level of interoperability. And maybe that is in this, you know, I think, you know, Ricky was mentioning specific use cases, and then Stephen, we discussed that need to just be able to kind of query for lab results. But to get to this point where we are not needing these point-to-point V2 interfaces for certain workflows. And that would, you know, so if you look at it from a commercial lab perspective, that would be, you know, say, hey, you can get rid of all, instead of saying, oh, you got to upgrade these to 2.5.1 and support these standards. And it would be like, hey, we're going to get to a point where you don't need that anymore, you know, where we can potentially use FHIR to support that. And let's say, just call that what I might call like an interfaceless, you know, or API driven level of interoperability. That was just a comment I want to make. The other thing I just wanted to add is, from a vendor perspective, I'm sure we're all aware there are certain, these are revenue generating activities for these vendors in many cases. And again, labs are spending large amounts of money to implement, you know, pay for the licenses for this, or pay for transaction charges associated with this connectivity. So that might be something else that has to be addressed if some of that goes away or those revenue opportunities go away for these vendors. How is that, you know, how receptive are they going to be, and how would they, you know, be able to continue to support it?
And I'm sorry, Eric, just so I'm clear on your comment, are you saying that vendors are making money off of requiring their customers to build and maintain interfaces?
Correct.
So they're not just making money off of providing laboratory services, they're making money off of providing interface services, and to lose that would cut into their bottom line.
Yeah, and it's not that the labs are paying those charges. Labs aren't collecting that revenue, right? The EHR vendor is collecting that revenue. Or you know, there are integration, you know, third parties that sit in the middle there that, collect that revenue.
Okay, Hans?
I would agree generally that it is going to be a balance between what standards and what capabilities are needed. Interfaces are a form of APIs. It's just a different form. It's a more classic form, but still an API. It's all about sharing data. And what's the best method? If you have a simple query today, FHIR is very well suited for that. If you have a complex workflow, of which the lab is one of the simpler complex workflows, still complex, but simpler than others, is that requires a level of interaction that FHIR may or may not yet be able to support, or the guidance is not there. So I think it's always an ongoing evolution. And in that progression is that what is then the right progression to wholesale change if you do a certification program, rather than targeted advances as new capabilities become available. So I think that's the balancing act. And so far we have seen that certification of a V2 guide LRI for general lab results reporting, focusing on EHR, has not achieved that. So I think we need to keep that in mind, that a wholesale approach is not necessarily the best thing to do. I think we're all trying to get to integration, interoperability without special effort. So the more that is plug and play, the less that there's custom, that's good. So focusing on new capabilities, eTOR, otherwise, where these new guides can be inserted, would be excellent opportunities. Does that require certification? Not necessarily, because the levers that are in play to support an eTOR or a public health or otherwise may already be sufficient to align with the right guides that do not necessarily need certification. I think the context here is that considered for nationwide across the board certification versus where do we promote the use of new standards? I think that's not always the same answer.
Thank you, Hans. I think you got the last word in. We are at time. I want to again encourage work group members to enter your thoughts into the spreadsheet. Phil, thank you for that. Hans, you've got a number of ideas there. We will be coming back to evaluate these recommendations in detail. Really appreciate all of our discussants today and presenters. Thank you so much. Very valuable, and have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.